April 5th, 2021, in Hillsborough, North Carolina, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Text 17. Deha ucha vachanjantu.
Deha ucha vachanjantu.
Prabhyo chrityati karmana.
Prabhyo chrityati karmana.
Shatra mitram udashina. Karmaiva guru ishvaraha. Dehan. Material bodies. Ucha avachan. High and low class. Jantuhu. The conditioned living entity. Prapya. Obtaining. Usrijati. Give up. Karmana. By the reactions of his material activities. Shatruhu. His enemy. Mitram, friend, Udashina, and neutral party, karma, material work, eva, alone, guruhu, his spiritual master, Ishvaraha, his lord. So this, again, is Krishna talking to Nanda Maharaj and trying to convince him to do the Govardhan Puja instead of the Indra-yajna. And he's preaching Karma Mimamsa philosophy. EBT translation. Because it is karma that causes the conditioned living entity to accept and then give up different high and low grade material bodies, this karma is his enemy, friend, and neutral witness, his spiritual master and controlling lord. EBT purport. Even the demigods are bound and limited by the law of karma. That Indra himself is subordinate to the laws of karma is explicitly stated in the Brahma Samhita 5.54, Yasvindra Gopa Matavendra Mahoswakarma Vandana Rupa Palabhava Janamantanoti. The Supreme Lord Govinda awards all creatures the appropriate results of their work. This is as true for mighty Indra, the Lord of the material heavens, as it is for the germ called Indra Gopa. The Bhagavad Gita 7.20 also states, only those who lost their intelligence because of various material desires surrender unto demigods rather than worship the Supreme Lord. In fact, the demigods cannot award benefits to anyone independently, as stated by Lord Krishna in the Gita. Mayaiva vihitan hitan. All benefits are ultimately issued by the Lord himself. Thus, it is not altogether incorrect to say that demigod worship is useless, since even the demigods are under the laws of karma. In fact, this is the case. But Lord Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is not subordinate to the law of karma. Rather, he can independently offer or withhold his favor. This is confirmed in verse from Brahma Samhita quoted above, the third line of which is Karmadi Nirdhati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajan. The Supreme Lord burns up all the accumulated karma of those engaged in his service, in his loving service. Not only is Lord Krishna above the laws of material action and reaction, but he can immediately dissolve these laws for anyone who satisfies him through loving service. Thus, the Almighty God is supreme in absolute freedom, and by surrendering to him, we can escape the bonds of karma and stop accepting their dismal rule as supreme. It sounds like we're done under worship. Okay, going to Sanatana Goswami's Tika, which is practically the same as Jiva Goswami's, almost word for word. Living entities accept and give up bodies by previous actions. One's action sometimes shows itself to be the enemy, sometimes becomes the friend, and sometimes is neutral. Quote, since there is no inclination to action without knowledge, one will need a teacher to obtain knowledge. That might be an objection. Action is the teacher, since without good karma, one cannot attain a teacher, and since without good karma, results cannot be accomplished, even having attained instructions. Another objection, since action is without consciousness, the giver of results must be the Lord. Replies, action is the Lord, since even the Lord follows after action. That is the power of action. Dehan Ichava Chanjantu, Prapto Sri Jati Karmana, Shatra Mitram Udashina, Karmaiva Guru Ishwara. Because it is karma that causes the conditioned living entity to accept and then give up different high and low grade material bodies, this karma is his enemy, friend, and neutral witness, his spiritual master and controlling Lord. So, Krishna's not lying here. It's not that he's lying. But he's giving information from a particular angle of vision. He's giving information from the angle of vision of somebody who's completely under the laws of karma. And for such a person, the laws of karma are everything. But there's something higher than the laws of karma, and because he's not giving that information, he's giving a half-truth. Right? And of course, a half-truth can be more dangerous than a lie. But at various places in the scriptures, it's like that. Reminds me of when Krishna says to Arjuna, for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. That's true. However, he goes further and says, one should be detached from honor and dishonor. Yes? That's a higher truth. And sometimes Krishna is speaking a lower level of truth, interestingly enough, to bring people to a higher level of truth. That's his purpose. His purpose is to bring them to the platform of love, loving devotional service to him, to Govardhan. But he's doing that by focusing on the lower levels. Quite fascinating. So he's saying that karma is everything. Your karma is your enemy. Your karma is your friend. Your karma is neutral. Your karma is your teacher. Your karma is your lord. It's everything. And for somebody under the law of karma, that is one's experience, isn't it? Yes? Somebody does something bad, and then karma acts as their enemy and gives them some suffering. Correct? Right? We see that even on a micro level, that if we do something sinful, even in this life, we may get a reaction in this life, or some small thing. You know, you park in a place you're not supposed to park, and your car gets towed, and you get a ticket. Right? Isn't it? You know, you eat too much, or you eat the wrong thing, and then you get a stomachache, or you get fat. You know, and it's, and so our own actions become our enemy. Does that make sense to everybody? We experience that, and our actions are also our friend. So if we do good activities, again, even in this life, even on a microcosm, so if I do good activities, if I'm kind to people, then it's likely that people are going to be kind to me. You know, if I'm honest, then I can live a, hopefully, a free life without being harassed by the government. You know, so then karma becomes my friend. If I give a lot in charity, then I get vast amounts of wealth and so forth. And karma can be neutral, just everyday life where no, one's neither doing anything particularly pious or particularly sinful. And certainly karma is our teacher. Yes? Is karma a teacher?
Yes.
Definitely. In fact, that's a lot of the purpose of these universal laws of karma, is to be a teacher. And karma is the lord, it's the boss. Everybody's under the law. Now, what's really interesting is that we are under this law voluntarily. You know, we talk about being forced by the laws of karma, but we're putting ourselves under the laws of karma voluntarily. We don't need to be under the laws of karma. We need to be under the laws of karma if we want to rebel against Krishna. The other day I was hearing a class, Prabhupada says this in many places, where he was saying people ask how we came to the material world, and he quotes the verse in Bhagavad Gita, Icha Dvesha. Because we had desires and we had attachments and aversions. It's often Prabhupada's answer to that question. And it's not just some distant past event in time immemorial as nitya-bhata conditioned souls that at some point, somehow, somewhere, we came to this material world, Prabhupada says Krishna is giving us a chance imperceptibly 24 hours a day. So at every moment we can choose, do I want to be under the laws of karma? And you might say, well, who would make that choice? Why would anybody choose to be under the law of karma? Well, there's a number of benefits one gets from being under the law of karma. One gets to think that one is the doer. We get to think that we're the doer. We forget about the five factors of action. We forget about the modes of material nature. And we think we're the doer. And we get a sense of accomplishment. We think, wow, I did this and this, and I worked so hard, and I sacrificed so hard, and look what I've accomplished. And we get this pride in our accomplishment. So not very many people want to give that up. Not very many people want to just rejoice that Krishna is the doer and just act as an instrument. Right? What else do we get by being under the law of karma? We get a sense of entitlement. You know, because I've done so many good things, because I've worked so hard, because I've sacrificed, because I've given this and given that and given this, therefore I'm owed things. And of course, this entitlement mentality is extremely prevalent in modern society. Right? These people's rights, and these people's rights, and these people's rights, and these people's rights, and these people's rights. Everybody's entitled to this, everybody's entitled to that. It's very prevalent. And of course, when there's a lot of entitlement, then we get to have a victim mentality, that anything bad that happens to us, well, we didn't deserve it. Anything good that happens to us is due to our hard work. We were just reading this in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita about the demons. And Prabhupada, in a class, was explaining, also in his purpose, his classes on the 16th chapter, that the demons, they think, by my strength, by my power, by my intelligence, by, you know, like the demons say, I'll do some sacrifice, I'll give some charity, and thus I will rejoice. I have gotten all this opulence for myself and my family and my nation. So one gets to think under the laws of karma that I have produced all these wonderful things, and also under the influence of the laws of karma, we get to think whatever bad has happened to me, well, that's just somebody picking on me, just somehow a victim. So this is very attractive. It's definitely attractive. If it wasn't attractive, then all of us, after our first 5 or 10 minutes of chanting Hare Krishna, would be liberated souls. That's the reality. We have some attraction to this ahankara. And I like to think of the laws of karma like the rules in a Monopoly game. I particularly like to think of it in Monopoly because I've watched people play Monopoly and they get very angry. You ever seen people get very angry? I don't know what it is about that game. But I've just seen people play it and get really, really, really angry about how much money they're losing or what properties they're losing. And it's like, it's play money. It's plastic little properties on the board. You know, and you're not even doing it for the television set or for millions of dollars as some big athlete or anything like that. Right? But one gets emotionally involved in this game. And in, you know, in these games with this fake money, I might owe you money or you might owe me money. And as long as, and we get involved in that. You know, I had a realization of this, I guess, 10, 15 years ago. That one of the reasons we take birth again and again and again and get under the law of karma is that we want retribution. If somebody hurt me, I want to get back at them. And if I hurt someone, I want to pay for it. And just like in ordinary life, if somebody owes me money, I want them to pay me. Yes? And when I see them, I remember, oh, they owe me some money. I remember years ago, I visited a temple in Europe, and the temple president said he'd pay for my train fare, which was 50 euros. I was there maybe 5-6 days, and he never gave it to me. And I was annoyed. It was like, he owes me 50 euros. It's not a huge amount of money or anything. But just, it was an irritant. And some years later, I happened to run into him at a train station in Europe, and I said, you know, you owe me 50 euros. And he gave it to me at that point. You know, so there's that tendency. And there's also the tendency, if I owe somebody something, right? If I owe somebody money, then I want to take care of it. I feel this kind of disquietude and unbalance. Right? Don't most of us feel that way? So this is part of what causes us to take birth again and 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 put ourselves under the law of karma. We're playing this monopoly game, and it's like, but he owes me $200, but she owes me a property, but I have to pay this and I have to pay that. And I've got to finish all this stuff. And then we're controlled by the laws of karma. Now, we'd all like to play the game without being controlled. But that doesn't work. Now, if you're really responsible, you get to be one of like the referees and the coaches in the game. That's what the demigods are. You know, they get to manage the whole game of karma. Now, as explained here in Karmadi Nirjati Kintubhati Bhajam, the earliest part, Esmanda Gopamata Venga Mahoswa Karma, Bandan Rupa Palabhajana Matanoti, even the great demigods are also playing the game. If you're a referee, you're a coach, you're also in the game. You're also under the rules of the game. Now, of course, for the great demigods, they're not quite under the rules the way we humans are. And you can see this when I used to teach Gurukul. I would take my high school students to the courthouse as part of their civics class. And, you know, the judge has some leeway. I remember this one guy that he was there for a drug charge, cocaine. And the judge says, this is your third time. He said, I'm putting you in a drug rehabilitation program, third time. If you drop out of it, you're going to be in jail for 15 years. So the judge had some leeway how to apply the law. The judge had to be under the law. The judge couldn't go above the law or beyond the law. But within the law, he had some latitude. And that's why when people pray to the demigods or they do austerities to the demigods can adjust things for them somewhat. You know, of course, that often doesn't get them quite what they want. But the demigods can make, you think, I mean, a company also. I'm sure we've all had this experience, that we want something done from a certain business. And when you go to the first tier, the guy, the person who answers the phone or the person at the desk, they're just like a robot. I'm very sorry, this is our company policy. I'm very sorry, we cannot give you a refund for that. That is our company policy. I'm very sorry, ma'am, but this is our company, right? And then you say, may I talk to your supervisor? And sometimes you have to go up two levels. And you get to someone who says, well, you know what we'll do? We can issue a credit, or we'll give you a replacement, or they can do that. Right? They can make some adjustment. But they're still under the company law, but their job description is that they're able to make some adjustment. That's part of their job description. So it might look to me as the customer that, wow, this supervisor can do whatever he or she wants. That's not true. But they're given certain parameters. Does this make sense to everybody? Mm-hmm. So you can make this adjustment for the customer, and this adjustment, this. But they can't do anything. It's not that they can just do anything. So Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, people go to the demigods to fulfill their lust, to try to get something that they didn't earn. You know, well, I didn't earn this by karma, so let me flatter the demigods. Or let me do austerities for the demigods. But they don't get you out of the game. You know, they might get you a better deal temporarily. But it doesn't get one out of the control of karma, because they're under the control of karma. So the fact that they have more freedom than humans gives us an illusion that such beings are worth worshipping. They're certainly worth respecting, and we're supposed to cooperate with the demigods. Krishna explains this in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There's supposed to be cooperation between humans and the demigods to please the Lord. But there's something beyond the game. There's a reality. The game has plain money and plastic properties. But there's something beyond. And this verse where Krishna is saying, you know, karma is your enemy, your friend, your neutral, your guru, your controller. It just reminds me of Bhakti Vinod in his prayer where he says, Janaka Janani Jayata Tanai Prabhu Guru Pati Tuhu Sarva. Krishna, you're my brother. And here's another song where he says something quite similar. He also adds the word brother in the other song. So really, it's not the law that's everything. Because there's a higher, we could say, law. The law of karma is the law of justice, where there's this absolute balance always coming into play. There's no real increase of anything. Anything good that I get, I have to pay for. Yes? And I have to pay for it with an equal amount of tapasya. So there's always this balance between suffering and enjoyment. It actually always becomes completely equal. And I can't increase your happiness through the law of karma beyond what you've earned. I can just be like the UPS driver for your good karma or the UPS driver for your bad karma. I can't hurt you beyond what you've earned, and I can't help you beyond what you've earned. Everything just always goes into balance. There's no absolute increase. It's like a hamster on a wheel. And this is why in this world, no matter how much we try to improve things, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Prabhupada talks about all the government planning commissions. It doesn't work. And whatever is improved on the one hand is unimproved on the other hand. Like so many advances of science and technology that made our lives more comfortable and then the whole world more polluted. You know, what we got on the one hand, we suffered for on the other hand. But there's something beyond that that is absolute good and is absolute increase. And what's really fascinating about the something that's beyond that is although we give up the illusion of being the doer, we actually can be an agent for good. This is the irony. Under the law of karma, we think I'm the doer. I'm doing good for myself, I'm doing good for others, or I'm doing something bad for myself, or I'm hurting others, and it's an illusion. Everything comes into balance, and I'm not the only doer, I'm really just observing. But on the spiritual platform, there is absolute increase without corresponding decrease. There's no payment for its spiritual good. I mean, unless you want to say the payment is to walk away from the game and give up your false ego. But that's not really a payment. That's just letting go of something suffering. That's like the payment for having a pleasant walk is taking the rock out of your shoe. You know, that's not a payment. Does that make sense? It's not like there's some austerity to take the rock out of your shoe, although that one may be attached to the rock in one shoe and feel that way. And this is the platform of love. Real love. Not the thing that looks like love in this world that is still under the law of karma. Where we say, oh, this person is my friend, this person is my enemy. But it's all just some illusion. And Bhaktivinoda says that the only laws in the spiritual realm are have prema, have love, and don't have envy. Don't have any malice. That's all. Have love and don't hate. Like we say, always remember Krishna and never forget him. So in the realm of love, things are completely different. Then one is out from the law. One is out from the game. There's no law. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshishami nasucha. There's no debt. I don't owe anybody karmic debts. Nobody owes me karmic debts. I will link by let go of any karmic debts anyone owes me. Okay, you don't have to pay me the 50 euros for the trip. Figuratively. And nor do I have to pay you for it. I don't have to pay anybody anything, and they don't have to pay me anything. We're out from under the law. Why? Because we give up the desire to be in the game. And how do we get out from under the law? Again, we have to give up that desire to try to be the controller and the doer and the, you know, accomplisher. To try to enjoy independently of the Lord, and try to make the world be what we want it to be, and make ourselves be what we want to be, and make everybody else be what we want to be. We give that up. We give up that ahankara. And we have to have a desire for love. You know, that's not so easy. Therefore, Krishna talks about in 12.9, doing abhyasa yoga, doing the process of sadhana bhakti in order to develop that desire. Ironically, although the law of karma never gets us anywhere, still we're afraid to give up being under the law of karma and go into love. At least the law of karma is predictable, right? It's this whole system of justice and balance and this, and, you know, like it's explained by Rupa Goswami that Krishna is dependable because even the demons know if I follow the law, Krishna will leave me alone. So we can think, well, at least under the law of karma, I know I do this, this will happen, I do this, this will happen, I can work it all out. Of course, understanding the law of karma is like figuring out an upside down banyan tree. It's pretty hard to figure it out. And you can think, I'm going to get it all together like King Rigatha did. I got it all together, he thought. And he made an accidental mistake that messed him up. But we're thinking, well, the law of karma is predictable, and I can figure this out, that out, I'll figure out the laws of nature. And love is unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen when you're in love. Isn't it? I mean, materially speaking, people who are in love are unpredictable, aren't they?
Yeah.
What to speak of spiritual love. And Krishna is unpredictable. You can't control him. You can't control what he's going to do or what he's going to say or where he's going to go. I'm thinking how when Mahaprabhu wanted to tour, you know, and his devotees kept saying, well, not now. Wait for this. Wait for this festival. Well, what about wait for this festival? And after this festival. And he's like, now I'm going. And then they faint and he just walks away. Goodbye. You know, and you just don't know. What is he going to do? As this pastime goes on and it's flooding, you know, he picks up a mountain. I mean, who could predict that? Imagine the government. Okay, there's going to be flooding. Let's pick up all the mountains. You know, he's not predictable. And so it's a little scary that we're thinking, boy, you know, I'm going to lose control and I'm just going to be under the control of God. Without realizing I'm not in control anyway. Otherwise, I'm just under the laws of karma. Would I rather be controlled by the laws of karma or by Krishna? But so getting this desire, gradually getting this faith that being under Krishna's control is going to make me much happier than being under the control of the laws of karma. And I do this through the process of bhakti. That is why we have this process, minimum 16 rounds, right, offering our food, worshiping the deity, reading the scripture, associating with devotees, etc., etc. It's to get us to awaken this desire. So more and more we start thinking, yeah, I'd like that. Yeah, I'd like that. I think I would like that. And we start to see where our resistance is. I remember many years ago I was at the Govindas in Delhi with Mayapur Chandra. We were getting my boxes that were being shipped from, I can't remember where. And my boxes traveled all over. Anyways, we're sitting at Govinda's and he says to me, you know, Krishna is a transcendental autocrat. That's something Bhaktisiddhanta says, right, the Prabhupada repeats. And I could feel in my heart this, no! I'm an American, I don't surrender to any autocrats. You know, it kind of surprised me. I'm like, whoa. I really don't want to surrender to Krishna. No wonder I'm in Maya. You know, it's kind of interesting. So as we do this process of bhakti, we start seeing these anarthas. We start seeing our false ego. Yes, when I first came to the Hare Krishna movement, I thought that I fully loved Krishna and I was fully surrendered. And, yeah, then you have that false confidence Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur talks about. One of the brahmacharis said to me, you don't love Krishna. And I'm like, well, what am I doing here, then? I should just go home to my mommy and daddy. You know, and as we progress in Krishna consciousness, we see, you know, I'm resisting Krishna. I want to hold on to my false ego. I want to hold on to this illusion of being the enjoyer. I want to hold on to these little teeny tiny drops of water in the desert payoff I get from my materialistic activities. And we start to see how ridiculous that is. I'm just like, well, that's completely ridiculous. Why do I want to do and we start to get a desire for the reality. We start to be attracted by the residents of Vrindavan and thinking, wow, if only I could love Krishna like that. And Prabhupada says if we develop the mood of the residents of Vrindavan to a minute degree, then our life is successful. So we start being attracted and attracted and attracted. And then it's not exactly that we earn Krishna consciousness. I mean, I know there's a purport where Prabhupada says that God is not partial, that everything depends on our practice of bhakti. But then there's another purport, that's the Bhagavad Gita, but then there's another purport in the first canto, 6, where Prabhupada says it's not by the mechanical process of hearing and chanting, but it's only by the mercy of the Lord. And he talks about how devotional service is free. He said, we may perform it and not get perfection. We may get the association of devotees or not. It's free. It's up to the Lord. It's grace. And we all have that experience that we get this grace, we get these realizations, and we can understand, I didn't earn that. It's just love. So why do we do the process at all if we're not earning anything by it, like we would earn money or we would build a building? We're doing that again just to increase our desire, because Krishna is not going to give us that mercy of love if we don't want it. Right? Like if somebody doesn't want to have a relationship with me, it doesn't work if I try to force it on them. Have you all experienced that? It just doesn't work. I can't force somebody to be my friend. In fact, the more I try to force somebody to be my friend, the more generally they pull back, isn't it? Haven't you had a lot of this experience? It's voluntary. So I can't force Krishna. I can't say, you know, well, I'm going to chant so many rounds and go to so many holy places and give so much money and wave so much incense and then you'll have to accept me. No, that doesn't work. But so the process of bhakti is to get us to desire, yes, I really want love, I really want love. And because Krishna wants that loving relationship with us, when he sees that we want it, naturally he gives it to us. The class I was listening to yesterday, Prabhupada kept saying, rest assured that you will become perfect if you follow this process. Rest assured. Rest assured. I was thinking like, you know, a little child that you carry them. Right, I remember when we were traveling in South India and Champaka and her older brother were very young and they fell asleep in the rickshaw before we got to the place we were staying, and then we just carried them sleeping into the place, you know, and they just wake up in the place. You can just rest assured. Not because the process is mechanical and not because we're the doer and not because Krishna is obliged, but that the process awakens that natural desire that, what am I doing under the laws of karma? I don't belong here. Why am I playing Monopoly when there's a whole world of unlimited opulence that's ever increasing in happiness and ever increasing in knowledge and ever increasing in relationships? And that there, as the soul, I actually have some agency. Why do I say I have some agency? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur nicely explains that bhakti is given by the mercy of a devotee. Yes, everybody knows this from Madhurya Kadambini. That Krishna is neutral. But when the devotee wants to give bhakti, then Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of the devotee. So I can't give you good karma that you haven't earned. I can't do that. I can be the UPS driver for the karma you've earned, but I can't give you good karma you haven't earned. You ever tried to help somebody and it didn't work? They didn't earn it, you couldn't do it. It wasn't effective. But on Krishna consciousness, I can give somebody the opportunity for bhakti that they didn't earn. Isn't that cool? So I can actually be an agent of somebody's good fortune. This is the irony. Under the laws of karma, I'm not really the doer at all. And as soon as I acknowledge that Krishna is the doer and I surrender to him, then I can actually be the agent of unlimited increase without payment. So the demigods who are pure devotees can do that as guru, but otherwise the demigods just in their role of demigods, they can't. They're also constricted by the law. So although here what Krishna is saying is true, it's just true within a limited sphere. It's not the ultimate Siddhanta. And it must be understood in that context. Really, the person who's everything is not karma, but the person who's speaking this verse. He is the everything. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections. Anything, Marsh? Yes, the Poor Little Bull.
Well, what was the situation with King Riga you mentioned?
King Riga? You remember where that cow wandered into the wrong Brahmin's group?
Yeah, but you said he blew it.
Because he was just trying to work under the law of karma. So King Riga was thinking, under the law of karma, I'm going to create unlimited good fortune for myself. So I'm saying, you know, we may think, I've got all the law of karma figured out. So I'm going to become the master of the world. But you can mess up without even meaning to. That's what happened to King Riga. He thought, I have it all figured out. And in fact, Yamaraj told him, he said, there's no limit to your material enjoyment you're going to get from your good karma. For Prabhupada said he wasn't intelligent. Prabhupada said if he was intelligent, he would have taken the unlimited good karma, become Krishna conscious in that situation, and not have to suffer at all. Yes.
Hiranyakashipu is the ultimate one who thought he figured it all out.
Ah, yes, Hiranyakashipu. Yes, he really thought he figured it out.
He had it all down. He had it down.
Yep. Yeah, he definitely did. Hiranyakashipu, yes, Vistapu was saying that Hiranyakashipu was the ultimate one who thought, I've got karma figured out, and I'm going to be able to conquer. And he didn't realize it was a higher law. Offend the Vaishnava, and all your good karmic results finish. It's interesting. Doing bad karma can't nullify your good karma. Doing good karma can't nullify your bad karma. You have to suffer for them separately. But if you offend the Vaishnava, not only does it knock out your bhakti latha bija, it even knocks out your good karma. You know, because Krishna's like, I don't want you having material power. You're just going to mess it up and bother my devotees. Go for it.
I was thinking that it's like, it seems like it's a shift of consciousness of what can I take versus what I can give. Like, I'm Krishna's versus Krishna's mind.
Well, it's interesting if you want to say I'm Krishna, Krishna's mind. Actually, not Krishna's mind to control, but I am Krishna, and Krishna's mind is the perfection of the aham mameti. So the idea that I am the enjoyer and all everything in my realm is mine, the perfection of that is I am Krishna's and Krishna's mind. And this mamata, Krishna is mine, Rupa Goswami says, is part of what happens in the process of spiritual realization for all devotees. Now, there are some devotees that have a little bit more the mood of I am Krishna, and a little bit, I am Krishna is, and a little bit less the mood of Krishna's mind, and other devotees have a little bit more the mood that Krishna's mind, and a little bit less the mood that I am Krishna's. But all the purified devotees think like that. Krishna's my what? Krishna's my son that I serve, or Krishna is my lover that I serve, or Krishna is my friend that I serve, or Krishna is my master that I serve. Not Krishna is mine like this. Although, Prabhupada said, the pure devotee holds Krishna in the palm of his hand. The devotee is thinking, I am a servant. Thank you for bringing that up. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.